Was this Milano Sanremo as boring as you thought it would be?
Nope.
Was the Poggio descent of Mathieu van der Poel better than the descent of Matej Mohoric last year?
Nope.
Did you expect more of Tadej Pogacar?
Nope.
Is Remco Evenepoel able to win La Primavera one day?
Nope.
Did a mainstream pick win Milano Sanremo?
Yes.
I've got the sparse, the sickness. There's the twins in my brain.
The first monument of the season is in the bag of Mathieu van der Poel. The 250 kilometers after the start were as hard as the beginning of a new working week, but the final had everything you wanted it to have as a cycling fan. The world's best riders battling it out for the win. I'm your host again for this episode, with two domestiques joining me today, Bram and Yves.
Good evening.
Bram, was this one of the best Milano Sanremo editions you've ever seen?
It's difficult to say. I remember a couple of really good ones, but yeah, having four guys really battle it out like that on the Poggio is great. I think I would have preferred to have seen a bit longer fight, maybe the Represa as well, but hey, we can't complain with what we got.
This was quite of a historical week for domestic cycling podcast, wasn't it?
We reached 19,000 followers on Twitter, and we also have now 1,000 monthly downloads for our podcast, so that is really cool. That's a nice, fun milestone to reach.
Yves, I'm going to give you your moment of fame already. As a Mathieu van der Poel and a Shari Bosseut fanboy, you must be feeling over the moon.
Yeah, my weekend can't be better than it is right now. But besides the two beautiful winners, we saw some crazy racing and very entertaining racing. I think this Milano Sanremo, or at least from the Poggio, it was really entertaining. A lot of guys could win when they started the Poggio, but when the big guns reached the front, we witnessed cycling magic.
Still, am I correct when saying you weren't really convinced Van der Poel was going to do this before the race?
Well, in our fantasy game, I had Van der Poel in my team, but I had Pogacar as well. I was doubting quite a bit about who would be my leader. I decided to pick Pogacar because the Strade Bianche from Mathieu just wasn't good enough yet. Yes, it was his first race of the season, of course. But then the week after, in Tirreno Adriatico, I expected maybe a bit more performance-wise from Mathieu. But he just played it very cool there and just saw it as an extra week of training. He did some two crazy leaders for Philipsen, of course, but that's like only a couple of kilometers when he's in the front. So I gambled, but I took the wrong leader. And yeah.
After all, it must be pretty hard for you as a non-mainstream picker, because it was a mainstream pick who won the race.
Yeah, it's always quite easy to say a Van der Poel, a Van Aert, a Pogacar will win Milan-Sanremo, will win a monument. Those guys are on a different level in comparison to the others. But I think my pick, Søren Krogh Andersen, in the preseason predictions, did a very good job. He helped Mathieu when the 10 balance Pogacar attack went. Søren Krogh Andersen was the one who tried to chase them back first, so that Mathieu didn't have to waste too much energy. And my other pick, Magnus Cort Nielsen, ended up in 14th. It's not the best, but it's still top 20, top 15. So, but yeah, the best one and the best four or five were at the front, the best four.
It might be an interesting way to start this episode by discussing our pre-season and pre-race picks. And as you say, Søren Krogh Andersen, you've been saying it before the season that this was going to be his race, and kudos to you. I doubted it, even last week, and he was one of the strongest domestiques in the race, really. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you very much.
Bram, your pick was a little worse.
Oops, sorry.
Arnaud Delis ended up in 95th place, and when I saw him being dropped on the first slopes of Gipressa, I had to think about you. How is your feeling about him?
I think I don't quite understand what Lotto Destiny was doing. Maybe it was his own decision, because before the race they were saying on the top of the Poggio they need to have the strategy clear if they're going for Ewan or for Delis. But if Delis basically storms up to the front of the peloton with Ewan in his wheel and then sits up, it was pretty clear that that decision had already been made. Maybe Delis, just during the race, had already said, I don't have the legs today, and decided to do a little bit of domestique work, which is commendable for him. And he did start as one of the shadow favorites.
So probably the 300 kilometers mark was a little above him.
Yeah, yet. I mean, he's 21. I think it is one of those races where he can win in the future. And I think he believes that as well. But yeah, not this year.
I think this year we saw a very fast edition of Milano Sanremo. The early break received only 3 minutes or less. When we listened to some experts, it was because of the tailwind. They didn't want to risk them too much pace, but that creates a very fast pace in the bunch for 7 hours. So
the Belgian commentator Michel Waits even said afterwards that it might have been the second fastest edition ever. I don't know if that's true, but he mentioned it. Having seen the performance of Delis in Sanremo, does that change your opinion about him at Gent-Wevelgem?
No. I think they're two very different races. But Sanremo, you have that really long build-up where, you know, maybe lactic acid gets into your legs in that 250 kilometers before the copy, and then suddenly you hit the copy and you're like, wait, what's going on with my legs? I don't have, like, they're not functioning as they should do. Gent-Wevelgem is a much, you have constant racing going on. You're always getting your legs activated. So that's quite a different race. And I don't think you would have that same issue.
I don't know how he's scheduling his season. Like, he is he started very good early on in the season, and he showed some great form in Omloop Nieuwsblad and Kuurne Brussel-Kuurne. He wasn't able to win or compete for the win in Paris-Nice, where he participated. And positioning, the positions of the sprint train were troubles as well, but now he dropped very fast on the Cipressa. Is he peaking towards Gent-Wevelgem, or is his first peak already over? Is that a possibility as well?
I think he has a very full calendar coming up over the next couple months. So I don't know if it's... maybe it was his first peak. In a recent interview, he did say that over the longer term, so maybe not this year, that he's really trying to go for races like Paris-Roubaix or the Tour of Flanders. I don't think he's riding the Tour of Flanders this year, but he is riding Roubaix.
I don't think so, but when I checked his schedule, I think there was Gent-Wevelgem, Dwars door Vlaanderen, and even the Brabantse Pijl was on there. So
yeah,
that's pretty tough.
A couple of races in France as well. He's got a very full schedule. But then again, he's the main points taker for Lotto Destiny.
Would it still be in their mind, the UC points?
After what happened last year, I think so. I think they're playing the long game.
They want to get in the World Tour again within the 3 years. So when the classifications are made up at that point, but I don't know, why would you make the schedule of such a young, talented guy so busy so early on in the season, like we're only March. He already has a lot of race days, and it's only getting more and more.
I'm going to assume their performance staff. I'm assuming their performance staff knows what they're doing. So
I think so far the team is doing a great job. Milan Mentin won as well, so
yeah, the team is doing a great job, but I get the feeling like I had last year with Pidcock, with a very busy schedule, that you will never be able to have that top fitness peak that he needs to win a big class, that he needs to win a big classic or a monument, even.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only monument he had the opportunity for this year, I feel, was Milano Sanremo. I don't think he's going to be there at Paris-Roubaix. I am prepared to eat humble pie if he does. but yeah, the full schedule, I think he just feels that he can manage it. But we'll see. Time
will
tell.
Moving on to Josh's pick, which we didn't even remember the past episode. He picked Caleb Ewan preseason.
All right.
And in fact, that wasn't so bad.
No. But yeah, he finished 16th. He climbed very good on the Cipressa, I think, where he was at the front at the beginning. And then on the Poggio, it was a big long line, where, by the way, Trentin's played a strategic masterclass, just breaking up that line. But Ewan didn't win the chasing group sprint after that as well. I don't know if it's motivational or just legs, but he was there, and the league couldn't even lead out him.
I don't know if we need to talk about my preseason pick, Biniam Girmay. He was still there on the Poggio, but when the bunch split it because of Matteo Trentin, yeah, he never really saw the front of the race again. He ended up in 28th place, and yeah, somehow I don't have the feeling he's as strong as he was last year. But then again, all of a sudden he won Gent-Wevelgem, so I don't know what to think about him.
He was in the same group as Ewan, so, and he didn't even go for a sprint. He just sat up in the back and didn't contest it. The team says that they're not worried about his shape, that they're still building. But it does seem quite odd that such an up-and-coming talent that he was last year, and he still is, that he's not fighting for big wins right now. I do hope to see him more in the Flemish classics, or the Cobble classics in general, because in the end that's where he's got his first major victory, so maybe that's just what suits him more.
Exactly, you will know more in about a week. Let's move over to the pre-race picks. If you already mentioned Magnus Kort, who ended up in 14th place, but I was even more impressed by his teammate Nielsen Paulus. Was an impressive ride.
Paulus, his season start has been exceptionally strong. He won several races, won one or two general classifications in smaller stage races. Paulus, I think he had his first pro win last year in the Japan Cup, if I recall correctly. But last year he showed himself already in Tour de France. And he became famous when he tried to counter the... He tried to follow the move on Remco Evenepoel in Liège-Bastogne-Liège last year, where both his wheels were off the ground, I think, when we saw that picture.
Yep, that's right.
But Paulus is really becoming a very strong rider in the pro peloton.
And he's part of your wheeler manager, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he is. He's riding the Dwarsdoor Vlaanderen, Ronde van Vlaanderen, and then going to the Hilly Classic. So he's riding quite a lot of races that are within our fantasy game. And he wasn't that expensive, so I took the gamble, and he already gave me some points in a race. I didn't really expect him to take that amount of points.
It's a great pick. Brum, we'll skip your pick for a moment. Let's move on to Josh's pick first. Jonathan Milan. He was a domestic for Mohoric, so yeah, he never really had a chance.
I mean, I think it was mainly due to the illness that he got during Paris-Nice, and apparently Josh didn't catch that, that he abandoned in the last stage, I believe. So yeah, I mean, in good health, Jonathan Milan should be able to at least be in the third group with Ewan and Philipsen and Magnus Kort. I think he would belong to be in that group. Maybe he could be in the group before that. I don't think he would have gone with the top four.
To be honest, if you see how the race yesterday evolved, Jonathan Milan could have never played a major role in that race, in my opinion.
I don't think so either.
No, top 10 maybe, but that's
his weight is a huge disadvantage, and when the big guns explode, then yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were two guys on the podium that have quite a bit of weight on them, especially the Italian, Filippo Ganna.
But I think Milan is even...
It's different, I think.
I think he carries a little bit more kilos. He's very strong. I think his absolute watts from Jonathan Milan are insane. Remember last year, I don't know where it was, Tour of Denmark, where Vingegaard was fighting a young guy from DSM.
And the Crow Milan, race.
Yeah, the Crow race, where Milan just tried to stay with a front group with the 50-kilo climbers on a very steep hill. That was really impressive, but he needs to lose some weight, or I don't know what... Is he a pure sprinter, or... Is he still... It's uncertain what he's going to be. Oh, he's
according
gonna be
to Pro Cycling Stats, he's 84 kilos for 1 meter 94. Which means he's 1 centimeter taller than Filippo Ganna and 1 kilogram heavier.
All right, that's surprising.
Oof. So they're very similar.
The last episode, I dropped the name of Tim Wellens. Back then, he wasn't even on the star list, but...
Brave
due
choice.
To some changes, he was at the start, and he did a great job as a domestique for Tim Wellens, setting a very, very high pace on the Poggio. So, after all, I think it was a good choice. Wellens did a great job, but yeah,
he's
it wasn't the scenario
becoming,
I had in mind.
He's basically becoming Pogacar's lead-out guy. He did very similar things in the Ruta del Sol as well. So, yeah, he's becoming the Pogacar lead-up.
And I got to admit, and Yves, you won't like it, I think, but I'm turning into a fan of Tim Wellens the last few weeks. The way he's riding, it's completely different than he did at Lotto Soudal at the time. So, yeah. I like to see him.
I completely agree. Tim Wellens is a completely different rider in comparison to the rider he was when he was in Lotto. He even has a different air around him. It's some fresh air and other training methods. A very good leader within the team helps as well. And he gets his own chances, like in the opening weekend, like his stage win in Ruta del Sol. And then in other races, he's just the best domestique for Pogacar at the moment, I think, within UAE. So yeah, I can completely agree with the fact that Wellens becomes more likable.
Do you think there's a chance that Wellens will get some freedom in the Flemish Classics with Pogacar in the team? Or will he be a full domestique?
He will get freedom, I think.
Yeah, I think he can operate as a satellite rider, and even if Pogacar never bridges over, then he will be able to get his own chance. Like, I think for him to not be the leader of the team is super important, and that's sort of what makes him race well. He can do more of... Well, he doesn't have that pressure on him that he's always had at Lotto, where he had to do it. Now he can just, do a different job.
I think in Sanremo, Sanremo isn't a race where there are a lot of different race strategies involved. It's like you base a little bit on Cipressa with the team, but now there was headwind, so there couldn't be made a lot of riders dropped. But like when you have the Flemish Hills, it's a all different race, all different mindset. You can anticipate, and that's something you can do in Milan-Sanremo.
All right. Bram, last week you dropped the name Wout van Aert for the win of Milan-Sanremo.
Yeah,
Were you happy with it, or did you think he was going to be stronger than what we saw of him?
No, I think it was sort of well, he was at the level where I think he would be at. You just had one guy who was clearly stronger, and then Filippo Ganna, I think, who in the chase behind didn't give it his all and sort of waited for a sprint. Although there are also questions about what's gearing choices in the descent. Maybe he bottomed out on his gears and wasn't able to really push. But yeah, I got accused for getting a mainstream pick and then another mainstream pick one. So.
You're not over
No.
it. Talking about that descent, I think Wout van Aert put a lot of pressure on Filippo Ganna, who had to close 10 or 20 meters a couple of times. So yeah, I can't see the problem with that descent actually.
I think that was mainly after the corners. Wout and Mathieu are both great bike handlers coming out of cyclocross. Filippo Ganna probably isn't as great of a bike handler coming out of track cycling. So maybe that's just that those two were taking a bit bigger risks in the turns. With us not having motorbikes on the road this year in the descent, we didn't really see that up close. But on the heli shots, you definitely saw that after corners, Wout kept getting a small gap on Filippo Ganna.
If I want to drop a quote of yours from the last episode, then you said, "Poggio isn't hard enough for Pogacar to create major gaps." And I think that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah, that will be the most difficult part for Pogacar to win Milan-Sanremo. The Poggio is a climb that hurts the legs after 300 kilometers of racing, but the gradients aren't very high to drop riders more than 10 or 20 meters. Yes, Mathieu van der Poel did, but it wasn't really on the Poggio climb. It was like more on the top going into the descent, just the last 200 meters, and that was like more. Van der Poel has always been a very explosive rider, and Pogacar is explosive as well, but he misses that extra punch on a 5 or 6% climb,
The
I
guy was
think.
totally on his limit when you saw that
Yeah.
last couple of 100 meters. He wasn't really able to sprint. No, Wout van Aert wasn't either, but it shows how strong Van der Poel was and what a hard final it has been.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I still look back at those last 10, 15 kilometers, and it was a phenomenal piece of racing from those guys. It went so hard, so fast, you couldn't even see they were going uphill. I wish I could ride that fast in a descent, but they are just exceptional.
One of the past days, I noticed an article in which Pogacar said that Sanremo is the most difficult monument for him to win. Do you guys agree with that?
I want to see him at Paris-Roubaix first, I think.
Yeah. I actually think if Pogacar wants to win Milan-Sanremo, he has to change his strategy. I don't think he has to attack over the top and go solo. He has a very strong sprint after a long race. We know that. I think he can follow and actually
But he
win
wasn't
a
able
group
to sprint
sprint.
yesterday.
Yeah, because he put everything into making a break on the Poggio and not succeeding. I kind of want to see him just sitting in a group of 10 and sort of doing what he did to win Liège. I think that's going to be... I think he can win it that way. He doesn't have to go solo.
Like, if he did, if he didn't do the job he did yesterday, we can maybe say the second group with Mats Pedersen would be with them. There will be a couple of fast men then surviving the Poggio if no one does what Pogacar does. Because what would Van der Poel and Van Aert do if Pogacar doesn't attack on the Poggio? Everyone expected Pogacar to attack.
Mm-hmm. That's one of those things where Pogacar being there is so great for Van der Poel and Van Aert, because they can try and follow and then have a really small group towards the line or attack themselves. They don't have to deal with the fastest men, although they are both equally or both fast men themselves.
I don't think Wout van Aert would have a problem with Tadej Pogacar not attacking, because he mainly wants to follow the first rider to the line and then have a sprint, which is tricky. But still, I think Van der Poel would attack if he's able to.
Yeah, I don't know. It's everyone was expecting Pogacar to go. He went. But I'm trying to think about the fact, if Pogacar doesn't do it, what should happen now? Yeah, it's always if, I know. But
Pogacar... Maybe someone like Alaphilippe goes. I don't think he had the legs for it this year. But in the past, he's always been one to say, on the Poggio, I'll go for it. You always have that every year. There's always someone who wants it.
But didn't Van der Poel say that this was his plan, to attack on top of Poggio?
Yeah, he did.
I think that's also based on the plan from Pogacar, to attack on the Poggio, and then basically Van der Poel's plan is to counter Pogacar. So,
but
it's a good plan.
I don't know. I think if Pogacar doesn't do it, we'll see maybe a surprising winner, because then you have maybe a certain Graham Andersen who can sneak away, and Van der Poel says, no, he's my teammate, and the others say, I'm not chasing him, because he isn't a big leader within a team, so it always gets a little bit more of freedom in comparison to...
You would also have the likes of Mats Pedersen at the front.
Yep.
So, yeah, I wouldn't want to go to the line with him after such a race. When Valens and Pogacar accelerated, there was one rider stuck on the wheel of Pogacar, Filippo Ganna. On a scale of 0 to crazy, how do you rate his performance?
Crazy, but not completely unexpected, I think.
Explain.
I think we saw Ganna 2 years ago in the Giro, where he climbed very strong. He proved there he's more than a pure time trialist. He's more than a track rider. He's a very complete rider. Then last year he had some troubles with illness and other stuff. I think 2 years ago he showed he can climb the 5 to 6% climbs suit him very well, because he can push a very high number of watts, very high number of power, and the effort on the Poggio is just within his capabilities in terms of duration and length, I think.
Yeah, you say it's not unexpected, but did you really expect him to follow Pogacar when the guy attacked? Like, even Van Aert had to close a few meters, but he was on the wheel all the time.
Yeah, that's true, but when we look back at the moment before Trentin played that strategic masterclass, it was one big line. Uh-huh. So when Trentin doesn't do it, there is a possibility the group on top of the Poggio will be bigger than it was now. Because now I think it was Cosnefroy in the wheel of Trentin, who just didn't have the legs or didn't want to jump across to the first group. But like, when you're sitting in the draft, I think it makes a lot of difference. You need to remember Wout van Aert was quite in a bad position at the moment. Tim Wellens,
he was the last guy in front of Trentin, I think.
So he had to do a big effort to get towards Pogacar. And if you can remain in the draft right from the gun, I think it's a difference.
Also, they went up at 40 kilometers per hour. So at 40 kilometers per hour, there's quite a bit of drafting.
There is one question that came into my mind when I look back at the final kilometers. I was thinking, what if Tom Pidcock was there? We'll never know, of course, but that could have made a big difference.
Oh, it's so hard to say with Pidcock, because you never know what Tom Pidcock you're getting. And this is the third episode in a row where I'm saying this, but you just never know.
If he has still, having two teammates in that chasing group, that's a difference.
But would he have been in that first group?
Yeah, that's the question. We'll never know the answer.
You never know with Pidcock, because in Stade Bianchi had some incredible legs. But then in Tirreno Adriatico, he said nope. Maybe he saw it just as training, of course, and he had two nasty crashes as well. But you never know before a race starts which version of Pidcock you will get.
That's right. But before the race, you said there was only one rider who was able to follow Mohoric in a descent like he did last year, and that would be Tom Pidcock.
True.
So, if he had been in that chasing group, what then? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We'll never know. It was also Jumbo-Visma's plan to have two riders over the top of the Poggio. But the crash of Trotnik changed that plan, because Laporte had to work before he was supposed to work. And that's where the plan failed, I think.
I think you should say that again, because in the upcoming part of the season, you will not be able to say a lot that Jumbo's tactics failed. I think they will learn a lot from this. They had bad luck as well with Trotnik. But, yeah.
Can you say it failed because of bad luck?
Being it Jumbo didn't work out.
I mean, if you're basically your second guy crashes and is not able to be at the front of the group. He was, I don't know which position he finished or if he even finished at all. But that's basically like asking if a sprinter's lead out guy crashes and then the sprinter is nowhere to be found in the final result. Is that a tactical error of the team? No, it's just your lead out guy crash and you have no way of moving up the peloton. That's how I see that.
If I see you thinking.
I think Laporte is more the lead out guy in this scenario. And Laporte should have been closer to Wout.
But the plan was that Trotnik was going to bring Laporte and Van Aert at the foot of Poggio. And then they both had to get over the top with the first riders.
Yeah, but Laporte had to help Van Aert positioning, but he didn't really have to be at the front of the peloton pacing. So we could have expected more from a good Laporte, but he has been ill as well because he didn't start Paris-Nice. You can say Jumbo's plan failed and they had some bad luck, but still, from a team like Jumbo, their second rider should be closer to their leader.
All right, if you, as the Mathieu van der Poel expert, is this the best version of van der Poel we're able to see?
I don't know. Van der Poel is a guy
who says
so. Yeah, I know, but it's so weird to see a rider like van der Poel, the way he's loading himself up for a big race, like the Worlds in Hoogerheide, now Milano Sanremo. Remember, Sanremo was a very big target for Alpecin. They even mentioned that at the start of the season. And he can just peak so extremely strong to one day. It's like it's calculated to, into the perfection. Like I need to be ready on the 18th of March, and everything that happens before that, I don't care. Is this the 100% Van der Poel?
Yeah. That's a story we've heard before, isn't it, Bram?
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Remco Evenepoel.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Van der Poel peaked towards Sanremo, which he did, what consequences that will have for Tour of Flanders and Roubaix?
None, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to impact it that much.
Is he able to,
pretty
keep,
close.
To keep this for, what is it, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
I think it's a very smart decision from him to not start in Gent-Wevelgem on Sunday. He's doing the E3 Saxo Classic Friday.
Is he doing Dwars door Vlaanderen?
He is doing... No, it's not on his schedule. So is he doing E3 Saxo Classic, Ronde van Vlaanderen and Roubaix?
Yep.
So he's only doing those three races. And I think with the form he has now, he can keep that till Roubaix.
All right. Let's get back to the start of this episode. I ask you the question, Yves. Is Remco Evenepoel able to win Milano Sanremo? And you said no. Can you explain that?
He has the same issue Pogacar has. The Poggio isn't hard enough, and his downhill capabilities will not be strong enough to win Milan Sanremo.
So, Filippo Ganna will never win Milan Sanremo.
So,
Bram, as the Remco Evenepoel expert, bring it on.
I don't think I'm the Remco Evenepoel expert, but apparently I am on this podcast. it's one of those things, I think if he wants to win this race, and I know I've said this before, Remco can win the races he wants to win. Remco is more than just a climber. He has this huge TT engine, which someone like Filippo Ganna has as well. Filippo Ganna is second this year. To say that means that Filippo Ganna can never win Milan Sanremo, I think if you can go second in a race, you can win the race. And with Remco, we don't know. Of course, he's never ridden it. But I think if he wins Lombardy this year, he might make it a target if he also wants to go for multiple monuments.
Well, he always said that he's going to focus on Grand Tours for a couple of years now. And then later on, he'll move the focus to classics. So I think if he really focuses on it, he's able to win it. I'm actually convinced about that. And Yves, I know we already discussed that at the Brabantse Pijl last year, where I said that Remco Evenepoel was able to win all five monuments if he wants to. But on this day, you're still not believing me.
Remco is an exceptional rider, but on terms of bike handling skills, he's not one of the top riders. And to win a Ronde van Vlaanderen and a Paris-Roubaix, you need to have the legs, you need to have some luck, but you need to be able to handle your bike very good. And I think real cobble classics will be an issue for Remco Evenepoel.
He has the calm on the Mur, so he is able to ride some cobbles. That being said, of course, during a real spring classic, it is different. You have to maneuver yourself to the front. I don't think he's going to take the risk for a couple of years because he wants to focus on those Grand Tours. But if you see now Pogacar doing it, I think somewhere deep down inside, Remco will feel, okay, if Pogacar can do it, I can do it too. And he'll also want to make the trip.
Well, I really hope this podcast will still exist in 10 years. So we can talk about that once again. Yves, you wanted to add something to that?
Who will be able to win the first five monuments earliest? Can Van der Poel win the five monuments?
Okay, I'll take it.
I think Lombardia will be the hardest one, and it will depend on who's starting there.
I think he might be able to. I think he tried once in Lombardy, where he got like
wasn't too bad
10th. So yeah, I mean he's gotten a few extra years in, but he needs to improve his climbing. Like his longer climbs, that's sort of his weakness. Where if you compare him to Wout, for example, Wout is a stronger climber on long climbs. So for example, you saw last year in Liège, Wout being very good there, getting on the podium. So what one can do, the other can probably do as well.
Imagine in a certain scenario, Van der Poel manages to win Paris-Roubaix in a couple of weeks. Will he make it a target for the 2024 season to try to win Liège and
Not
Lombardia?
Necessarily for the 2024 season, but it will be something that is in his mind, I think, yeah.
I think every cyclist, once they've gotten three, they can go for four or five, or try to at least.
There's still an important factor of the 2024 season, that's the Olympics, which we shouldn't forget.
Yeah.
All right.
Forgot about it.
There was a women's World Tour race today in Italy, and Yves, you saw that final. So please tell us, what did you see?
I saw the last 15 kilometers of that race. And Trek Segafredo did what Jumbo-Visma did in the opening weekend. They dominated the race. Sherin van Androoy started attacking with 50 kilometers to go. She got a lot of help from Ria Lini, if I recall correctly, the youngster from Trek Segafredo. And then Sherin tried again with around 20 kilometers to go. And the second group was just, I don't know what they were thinking, but there were like three or four Canyon SRAM ladies, two DSM ladies, and there was just no cohesion in the second group. Of course, Amanda Spratt did an amazing job just jumping on every wheel and to stop the chase. But I think Van Androoy was very strong, but the chasing group did a lot of things wrong as well.
Is this the start of a big road career for Van Androoy?
Yes.
I think we can be quite sure of that, yeah.
So
she's 21 years old. She just won her first World Tour race. She already showed herself last year, where she won the white jersey in the Tour de France Femme. Yeah, she will win a lot more races.
So to conclude that race, Trek Segafredo was in control all time, and Canyon SRAM didn't use the right tactics.
They were there with the numbers, but it was not only Canyon SRAM, like Team DSM as well. They just attacked instead of organizing a chase, and FDG as well. They had two women in that chasing group. But I think I would like to give a special mention to our young wolf, Ricarda Boyenfeind, as well. She rode very strong. She attacked multiple times. She was very active in the final of the race. So I think that's very promising for the future.
Mm-hmm. This Sunday was really a women's cycling day, because I think in France there was a women's race as well.
Tour de Normandie.
I don't know who won there. Yves, do you know?
I need to check. Ah. I think it's Charlie Bossuet. I didn't see a single second of that race. I just saw the notification on my phone from First Cycling. Charlie Bossuet won. I had to slap myself for a moment to know if I was sleeping or not. But I think it's her first pro win.
And the first message I got from you is she's ready for Gent-Wevelgem.
Yes. Write it
Which
down.
is next week.
It's not a mainstream name. Shari Bosset is gonna win hand to hand woman. She's gonna beat Lotte Kopecky in the sprint. And then your claim is over as well.
What a way to end this episode. So we're up for a pretty busy week of racing with Classic Brugge de Panne for both men and women. Idrie Saxobank Classic on Friday, and then on Sunday we have Gent-Wevelgem for men and women. So guys, are you ready?
Yes, yeah. Bring it on.
All right, Bram, the floor is yours.
Well, I think we've said everything we wanted to say. That just leaves me with thanking you, our audience. Thank you for tuning into the podcast again this week. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you like our content, please consider supporting us by buying us a coffee through our Ko-fi page, which you can find in the description. Your support helps us to continue producing great content. For those of you watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications so you never miss an episode. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Domestique Cycling Podcast.
I've got the sparse, the sickness.